And hello, my name is Sharon. I am hosting or moderating the call today, and we have three speakers, and our topic today is the three S's, solvency, sponsorship, and service. And I would now like to introduce our first speaker, Alexandra B.W., who will share on solvency. And Alex, you will have up to 14 minutes, and if it's okay, I will give you a two-minute warning. Does a two-minute warning work for you, Alexandra? Okay. All right. Thank you so much, and go right ahead.
Thank you. I want to thank Sharon and Bill and Chris for all the service you do, and the General Service Board, the World Service Conference committees, the appointed committee members, the project contributors who make all this possible and support me in my solvency and my recovery. I'm Alexandra. I'm a compulsive debtor. I would like, well, I guess I'll learn later, but I wanted to start with just a question of definition. I heard once that wisdom, the beginning of wisdom, is calling things by their right names. And solvency, as I use it and as I hear it used in the rooms, it's very regional. Some places use the word solvency to mean not incurring new unsecured debt a day at a time. It doesn't mean that my assets outweigh my liabilities, although they do. Thanks to DA, I have no longer any debt. And so in some places this is called abstinence, abstaining from incurring unsecured debt a day at a time. So it doesn't correspond to the dictionary definition, but I think the origin is to have a word that is ours and that indicates the recovery that is possible when I don't incur unsecured debt a day at a time. So I will talk about what I do, what my practice is. My story is not that I came into DA and never debted again, but my story is that each day solvency recovery is my priority and that I will go to any lengths not to incur unsecured debt a day at a time. And here's what I do. You Popeye fans will recognize the character Wimpy, who would gladly pay you Tuesday for a hamburger today, so I don't do that. I don't ask you to lend me $10 till Wednesday. I did that all the time. I don't use charge or credit cards. I'm self-employed, and I don't use them either in my personal life or my business life because I'm a compulsive debtor. Two hats, same head. I cannot safely debt no matter what. I don't bounce checks, and what that means is that I take care of my bank accounts, I reconcile them. So if a check does bounce, it's an error. It's a mistake. As a self-employed person, I pay my quarterly estimateds in full and on time. Last year I overpaid so much that actually this year everything was put toward my quarterly estimateds. That was a big help in this particular year. And if I change that, I check with my accountant, who is not my higher power, and I choose an accountant who doesn't favor doing funny things. And I pay for goods and services when rendered. So, for example, if I go to the dentist and it's going to take several sessions, I will pay up so that when I leave after the last session, I don't leave owing anything. These are all the opposite of what I used to do before I came into DA. And when I came, the way I managed my money, and it got crazier and crazier as I got farther and farther away from what I thought my life should look like, is and this is how my life was unmanageable. I managed my money on the basis of how I felt, and that meant acting out. So I made decisions on the basis, I didn't know any of this until I stopped debting, on the basis of fear, on the basis, that was a big one, all different kinds of fear, that it wouldn't look a certain way to myself or to other people, Yeah, it's pretty much just variations on fear. And what I learned in DA, and I couldn't stop debting, and I knew that debting was my problem. I took out a student loan. Money was very much the currency of affection between my mother and me. And one of our most intimate mother and daughter moments was standing in line together where I was getting ready to go, probably because she was going to co-sign for a student loan because I was going to be a teacher, and that was, you know, I became visible. And yet when I came into DA, I was able to start stopping debting. And I'm not going to go into the exceptions. So in October of 1986, I had set everything up to try to control my debting, and everything fell apart, and I borrowed money to pay off a debt, so borrowing from Peter to pay Paul, that's called, my mother to my stepmother. And this whole superstructure that I didn't even know was running me just fell apart. And all of a sudden, I had the grace, the good luck, to see that nobody was going to come up to me and say, you look like somebody who could write a screenplay. You know, that this mysterious ship was, you know, going to come in. It did. It turned out to be DA, but of course I didn't know that because I didn't know about DA. And so I'm joking, I'm laughing about it because I'm safe on shore. But it was a period of despair, and I despised myself because I hadn't killed myself. But it was the grace to see things as they were. And so my thought was, well, I'll just go on this way, and maybe I'll get hit by a bus. That was my plan. So I found out about my relationships. I think that's very important because money is a currency between people. My relationships were shredding. I was extorting care without meaning to. I'm an affectionate person, but I wasn't able to act on my nature. Very dependent, very self-centered in the way the AA literature especially talks about. There are just a lot of different ways that I did that. In January, the following January, this is incredible luck. I mean, that DA exists at all, and that I was born into a time when DA exists is incredible luck. In the following January, after my grace, I learned about DA in a magazine article, and I immediately started keeping my records and writing down my numbers. And I went to a meeting that month. I'm not going to go on about the early meetings. I will just say that when somebody said it was a spiritual program, I came stoned to my second meeting. I'm sober now. And a couple of things happened at those early meetings. One is that the basket came around and I put something in, you know, maybe a quarter, which might have been all I was traveling with because I was such a debtor that I just didn't think about it. I didn't do the business. Service, I think it was something like putting the chairs away. And I got that. And it was I had a notion of service. I had engaged in service. But this somehow was a sense that I somehow got, and I could not have said it at the time, that this was supporting me. Putting that chair away was somehow supporting me. I also heard in my first meetings really hilarious things. People laughing and good-humored and energetic, and they were debtors. Somebody said, the lottery is my retirement plan, and I don't buy the tickets. And that's me. I just knew I was at home. So I started stopping debting. I was mailing my payments by the due date. I later started writing in my calendar when to mail a check so it would arrive on time, or when the automatic withdrawal, I'm doing more and more of those, happen. So calendar is very important to me. And something about how it works, which is AA literature that's often read at DA meetings, just something about what I was like, what happened, what I'm like now, what we were like, what happened, what we're like now. I did understand a couple of things. One was that we were encouraged, you know, by these angel voices to listen for the recovery that we wanted and to go to those people and ask them to do a PRG, which were called pressure meetings, and to ask for phone numbers. So I would go up to people and ask for a phone number, and then I would say, but don't worry, I'm not going to call. So that was stage one. Stage two was, would you give me your phone number and let me know when you won't be home, and I'll leave, and if it's okay, I'll leave a message on your voicemail or answering machines, as they were. Something that was huge and really makes me well up a little bit was that as I committed as I was to debting, that I started to take shape. And I think of that promise that says that how we became, you know, we become the people we were meant to be. I don't know about meant to be, but as I stay solvent, I am, the person forms because I started making choices. And I started making choices since there wasn't going to be just like money to fill in, and I was living on the money that I was earning, and that was a humbling experience, chasing checks and handing invoices in on time with my pressure relief support. So I was making choices about what I really wanted, not what things should look like. And it could be something like, okay, we go to dinner and a movie. Well, no, I don't have money for dinner and a movie. So what's the point? It's the movie. It's talking about the movie. Let's go for a movie and coffee. And much later, you know, what do I love to do? I love to swim. So I had a free pass. I love the free passes, to a swimming pool in my neighborhood that had piped in Mozart, but it was also $5,000 a month, which isn't in my spending plan for swimming pools. So for, I think, $50-something dollars or $25, I don't remember, but I have it somewhere, I could sign up for a municipal pool that was like a five minutes further walk from where I live, perfectly clean and swimming. So those have been...
2 minutes, Alex.
Okay, so 2 minutes. All right. So then I will just get current and say that if I go to sleep tonight without incurring new unsecured debt, I will be celebrating 145 days of solvency. And I'm scampering. I want to tell you, oh, I had this much time before. That's what I have. My circumstances, anyway, I received a communication, and I realized that I had not written two payments in my calendar, and so those payments didn't get made. This is not about excuses, even though I want to, because this is not about good or bad. This is about numbers. This is about learning from that solvency had lost its priority. I was all over the place. And since then, with counting days, I'm paying very much attention. I've slowed down. I finish what I start. I follow things through. And I ask myself every morning, what do I have to do to be solvent today? I have a lot on my plate. A lot of us have a lot on our plates. It's a very emotional time. And for me, solvency is staying on the beam. So that there's less wiggle room for my willfulness, and my willfulness is really just sort of fear and other character defects and that don't really allow me to take the best care of myself. And my bottom line self-care is not debting a day at a time, and then it's keeping numbers and it's the other tools. So with that... And also another part of solvency is that my experience, a lot of it is taking the action and letting go of the results. And that is, you know, very much living in the steps, in the third step, And I'll just close.
And that's time.
Okay, I'll close with a couple of quotes that I love. Solvency is sanity. Vision without solvency is hallucination. And the spiritual part of DA is like the wet part of the ocean. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Alex. I would now like to introduce our next speaker, Bill D., who will speak on sponsorship. Bill, you will also have up to 14 minutes, and I will give you a two-minute warning. Bill, does a two-minute warning work for you? And Bill, you may be muted.
Yes, it does work for me.
All right, great. Go right ahead. Thank you, Bill.
Thank you, Sharon and Alex and Chris. And especially I want to talk about how wonderful it was hearing Alex's experience, strength, and hope. When I was first thinking about joining the General Service Board, she was one of the people I talked to, and she encouraged me. So thank you. I started coming to DA meetings in April of 1991, but about 5 or 6 months before that, before I had ever heard of Debtors Anonymous, a higher power I didn't even know I had started reaching out to me. And the result was that in January of 1991, I hit a bottom with debting. Because I wrote a check and then took too much money out of my checking account, and the check bounced. And I had just moved from New York City to Texas, and I thought that the geographical cure would be effective, and it wasn't. And I got in my car, started driving blindly, ran through a red light, almost caused an accident or accidents, but didn't through the grace of God. And then a few days after that, My higher power just told me to open up this book, and when I did, I saw the words Debtors Anonymous, and I knew that was for me. So it took me a few months to start going to DA meetings because there was a crisis in my family that was also, timing was providential. So when I started going to DA, I'd never heard about 12-step programs before, had no idea what they were. I had heard that there were a 12-step program of AA, so I knew that there were 12 steps, and that was it. And when I first started going to meetings, the very first meeting, I felt at home in a way that I never had or barely had in any group of people before. I felt loved and accepted, and there was laughter, particularly at something that I said. And it wasn't at me, it was with me. And I knew that all these people, 30 or so people sitting in a circle, were with me. And after a while of attending meetings, probably like 5 or 6 months, something like that, people started asking me to do what at the time were called pressure groups. Now we call them PRGs, pressure relief groups. They started asking me to do those, and I couldn't because I had never had one myself. And I recognized that in order to improve in the program, to advance in the program, to, you know, gain the benefits of the program, I needed to have a PRG. I had been kind of working the tools. You know, I hadn't debted since January 1st of 1991. I'd gotten rid of my credit cards even before DA. But so I asked two friends of mine in the program if they would do a PRG for me, and they agreed. And after a while, I got the courage to ask one of those people to be my sponsor. And she readily agreed. And I didn't really know quite what a sponsor was. I kind of had a sense that it was an advisor, a spiritual advisor, which I think is a truth. But then I really kind of learned that the point, or one of the points of having a sponsor, was working the steps in Debtors Anonymous. So I began to work the steps with her. And, I don't remember exactly how I worked the steps in DA that very first time. I don't know why. I don't remember. But I've worked them a number of times since then. And in addition to working the steps, one of the things that I did a lot was just to call my sponsor. And that's what they say to do. Something comes up, you have a question, call your sponsor. If you think, oh, I'm going to do this because it sounds like a good idea, call your sponsor. Because for someone new in recovery or maybe someone long time in recovery, a good idea does not necessarily mean a good idea. You know, at one point I was moving out of an apartment, and I had lost, or I think I had loaned one of my burners to a DA member, stove burners, you know, whatever those things are called, the black things, to a friend who needed it and never got it back. And I was you know, leaving my apartment. And I thought to myself, well, I'll just move, and, you know, like, maybe they won't notice, or maybe they'll, you know, say, oh, we're not going to charge them for it. And then, you know, I called my sponsor and we talked it out, and she said, no, I mean, you need to not do that. So, pardon me. And so we went out to a hardware store, bought one, which looked much newer than the other three. And immediately when we talked, I knew that that idea was a good one. So I worked with that sponsor for probably the first 10 years of being in DA. And at another point, I worked the steps with someone else, but my original sponsor stayed the same. And I was able to see through my sponsor what the benefits of the program could do. When I first met with her, when we did PRGs, it was in her house, and she always had several cats wandering around that she had adopted and, you know, taken care of. And she wanted to be the crazy cat lady. Basically, her dream was to actually have a cat rescue organization. And at the time, she had been working in a bunch of just kind of not too good jobs. And within the course of my friendship with her, and I'm still friends with her, she opened up her own cat rescue organization, and she's had it for almost 20 years, if not that long. And I donate to it every month. Beginning of the month, when I get paid, I give back to her because she gave so much to me in the first place. And when I moved to Los Angeles after about 10 years in DA, it took me a while to find a sponsor that I thought would work well for me. And that sponsor did work well for several years. But there came a point when I felt that I needed to change sponsors, because that sponsor said something to me that I didn't appreciate in a way that I didn't appreciate it. And I thought, I don't want to be talked to like that. And I thought about what the person said, and I thought, yeah, I do have some fault here, and I made amends for that. And then I asked someone else to be my sponsor. And that relationship is ongoing. So I've worked the steps several times with my original sponsor in DA in Austin, and then with another person. And then I worked them with my first DA sponsor in Los Angeles, and then again with my next sponsor. And one of the sponsors had me work the steps with what we call here in Los Angeles the Yellow Book. It's not World Service Organization approved. It's something that SoCal DA has and kind of borrowed from another program. But it is a good way of working the steps. And it is thorough. It's very thorough. I think step four has like 138 questions, something like that. Many of those questions you can just say nope and you go to the next one. But some of them take a lot of thought and work. So it was a very good way of doing it. Another way that I worked the steps here in Los Angeles that was the second time, was a more traditional big book kind of way. although my sponsor in that program, or although my sponsor who worked them with me was not a member and is not a member of AA, he had me do it according to the AA Big Book, and it was very effective as well. I am I'm currently working the steps in another program, but I do have sponsees in DA who are working the steps with me, or I'm working them with them perhaps. And one of the things that what I've been doing lately is asking them to read that particular chapter in the DA 12 and 12 and 12. So I'll ask them to start out with step one in DA, to read the several pages in the book, to take notes on it, and then to talk through the notes with me, to discuss their history with that particular area of recovery, whether it's a higher power, you know, coming to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore sanity, or just willing, you know, admitting what we did that was essentially insane. So once we feel like we have a good take on that step and we feel thoroughly finished with it, then we move on to the next one. And that seems to work. At this point in my life, I'm very busy with a lot of different things, a full-time job. I'm also taking college classes in addition to that, because that's a good way to raise my salary so that I can retire at the highest salary in 4 years. And I'm also doing a lot of volunteer work for the board. I don't call my sponsor as much, I can't say as much as I should or as much as I need to. I talk to him occasionally and everything seems fine. And he's also one of my PRG members now. So three or four times a year, I'll have a PRG and we will connect then, and I'm assured that I'm on the right path. I feel that anyway. You know, when I first came into DA 29 years ago, one of my PRG people offered me like pre-made food that she had cooked so that I could put in my freezer so that I would have something to eat. Because I just
2 minutes, Bill.
Thank you. I just didn't have at that point enough money for food. Today, those 29 years later, I have plenty of money for food. I have a wonderful place to live. I have two beautiful cats, one of whom is audibly snoring across the room from me. I work a lot online, so I just bought myself just a beautiful gaming chair like the kids use, because this is what I need to be comfortable at the computer. And I also have a retirement account from my job. And as I said, I'm working to increase my salary so that my retirement benefits will be at the highest they can be. And when I retire in 4 years, I don't see it as stopping work. I just see it as changing jobs. And I'm thinking about all the things I'll be able to do when I do retire that just give me pleasure. And some of them will be able to give me income, and some won't, probably, maybe, and that'll be fine, because I know that my higher power has me and has had me for these past 30 years, actually long before that, but I just didn't know it before that. And I believe that my decision to ask someone to be my sponsor so that I could start working this steps is what really got me on the path here. Because as we say, it's not a 12-tool program, it's a 12-step program. We work the steps, and that is where serenity, spirituality come from. And also the greatest gift I've gotten in this program, I think, is that I never, ever, ever wake up in the morning thinking, the money. I used to think that. I'd wake up and 3 seconds later, as soon as I was able to wake up a little bit, an anvil descended onto my head and my chest.
That's
and that
time,
anvil
though.
Was my worry, thank you, about money. And I no longer have that. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Bill. Really appreciate your share. I would now like to introduce our final speaker, Chris S., who will speak on service. And Chris, you will have up to 14 minutes. And is a two-minute warning good for you? And Chris, you'll need to press star 6 to unmute. Chris, we still can't hear you. Can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yes, we can hear you.
Yes. Okay. Is Chris on the line? Oh, she just texted me. She has having a problem, but she'll be right here again. So I just want to say thank you so much to both of our speakers, and I'm really looking forward to hearing Chris share on service. So she should be right back, hopefully. And we will have time for questions or comments. So if everyone, I think we have a little over 30 people on the call, so that's really great. So save your questions, and we will have time as soon as Chris has finished speaking. So hopefully she will be
Sharon,
momentarily.
Can you hear me?
It's Chris. Hi, Chris. Yes.
Hey. Yes. Oh,
yeah.
So sorry. For some reason, my phone wasn't, I kept hitting star 6 and it wasn't doing what it should do. But yeah, the 2 minutes
happens.
Is fine. Yeah.
Okay.
2 minutes is fine.
Well, without further ado, Chris, go right ahead.
Thank you so much, Sharon. I am Chris. I'm a debtor, compulsive debtor. And it's great to be here, and I've really gotten a lot out of enjoyed the first two shares. Thank you, guys. I'm going to be right in the moment here and just use that. So I had been on the call the whole time, listening, enjoying, and knowing I was up next, and my phone would not let me hit the star 6. That's never actually happened on this phone. This phone has issues for sure. That's another DA thing I could talk about, the need to take care of my stuff and make sure that something like an important technology device is working right. Whole other issue. But I'm going to talk just briefly about, you know, the panic of hitting star 6, and Sharon saying, is she there? Can anyone else hear me? And then I quickly text Sharon. I don't know if you got that saying. I'll call in again. Whatever. You know, I am such a nervous wreck when it comes to so many things, and I have such doubts about myself. That's a lot of my disease. I love our new 12 steps, 12 traditions, and 12 concepts of Debtors Anonymous, the 36 principles of recovery. I absolutely love this book. And in the foreword, which the foreword just blows me away, it talks about, first they're talking about, you know, how the first people figured out what DA was going to be. First they saw that a key characteristics among debtors was the illusion or belief that there was not enough in the world for them and there would never be. And then it goes on, the group defined debting, whether compulsive or chronic, as a disease that manufactures a sense of impoverishment in everything we see and do. And I have been so frightened of being out in the world and working a job. I wanted to be in fantasy and hang on to the idea that, oh, I'm just going to be a musician and I'm going to somehow, like, even though I can't practice because I can't discipline myself and I all these issues, I'm going to somehow just be this, like, you know. And it's like I learned in DA that actually, no, you got to go out there and get a job. I can work towards my music and I can do all those things, but I need to get a job. I need to support myself. And for me, that meant after I lost my waitressing job, it meant like getting secretarial work, getting admin stuff. I was terrified. And the only reason I could step forth and do it was because I had been in this program, and through service, through taking on tasks that forced me to be in community with other people, other loving, very extra kind people, people who I trusted because I knew them from DA, could I start to see myself, Alexandra said, you know, I start to form who I am. I start to come out as somebody who, oh, I can do this. I can handle things. I can do technology. You know, I can, as opposed to that definition of just there's not enough and there sure never will be for me and this is all going to be bad. You know, that attitude, that is my disease. There's not enough for me. And there's certainly enough, like, not brain power, ability, and just the, now in my current job, I work in a very admin type job at a bank. I've got to be doing, like, I do Skype calls and I do lots of conference calls, and sometimes I'm the moderator for a call with, I don't know, 10, 15 people. Talking about technical stuff like testing your files and stuff that I still to this day, I really don't know that much about it. But I've learned through doing service that, first of all, you know, fear, face everything and recover. I can step forward. I can do this. I would have never, I can't be grateful enough for DA, and particularly this part of it, this service thing that forced me to, I wouldn't have been able to tell you how frightened I was of all of you and being able to do something. Because I'd be like, I was so entitled and so like, entitled and what's the other word? When you just think, you know, entitled is the word I'll think of it in a minute. I didn't even know that I had this. I didn't even know. It took years in DA. And as I started to do certain things of service, I was forced to be like one among many in community with others. And with people who I happened to, through the program, having gone to a lot of meetings, I could trust, you can trust these people. You know, service is like, and I know a couple people who like to say DA, service is DA's best kept secret. And that's certainly true for me. I think service is the angle that has given me so, so much of my, of learning who I am, what I can do. I wrote a few notes, surrender. You know, service is surrender. Surrender to not knowing, oh, I'm going to sign up for some task that I don't know if I'll be able to do it and how will it work out. Surrender to being part of a group. Surrendering to be vulnerable and needing help. You know, yeah, I'm going to need a lot of help if I sign up for that service. Getting involved in inner group where, you know, at one point I was like, oh, my God, they're all so crazy. How will I ever do this, you know? I love it how this program, there is no theys, there's only us, and if there's some craziness going on, then can I show up and be a little bit of sanity? Can I show up as a piece of sanity to support, you know, my program and maybe a group or a particular service that's struggling? I've had some really interesting, like I said, I mean, the service, I mean, I could never be at the job that I am today. Never, ever in a million years. I've learned that if, you know, like this thing with the technology, it's just perfect because I panic. I go into my brain, and I've talked a lot with my therapist, the brain shuts down and shuts off, and you do kind of become dumb. You know, I do lose the capability to even move my fingers maybe, you know, or open my mouth. I am so petrified of, like, not doing something right or having something go wrong. And it was service. You learn, because I finally start to get to have experiences, because I finally allow myself to join in, I get the experiences of seeing something through. It's like, oh, guess what? It's okay if that happens. Yeah, your worst nightmare. Exactly. Your worst nightmare. It's going to happen. But I'm going to be okay, you know, and I'm going to be able to get through that. I don't know if this is resonating with a lot of people, but fear for me, you know, I'm just not enough. I am just not enough. Again, that first thing I read, there's not enough. I'm sure not enough. I am sure not enough. And I will never be enough. I will never be enough. That is this attitude. That's my compulsive dieting. It permeates. And service chisels away. I'm joining in. I'm doing our unity. You know, we support others. We support our program. So service keeps all these things going. The structures, the meetings, the whether it's setting up chairs or, you know, being chair of the GSB, you know what I mean? Like, it's all keeping us going. It's all, they're all taking care of ourselves. So I show up, I take care of myself and my program by participating. I know another program says participation is the key to recovery. And I think that can kind of, in the terms of service, you know, participation is a key to my discovering me. I get to see my mistakes. I get to see how I fall. I get to see how, oh my God, it's safe to fall. These people are all around me. They're all helping me and holding my hand. I struggle with my service all the time. Right now, I'm an ACM, appointed committee member. That means that I have applied for this position by writing a letter about my service that I've done in the past. And I got some references, and the General Service Board has taken me on to serve on the Literature Translation Licensing Committee. So I sit with the board members once a month, and I'm a voting member, and I help out in any way I can. And I kick and scream. I kick and scream. I'm already doing too much admin stuff at my job, and I don't want to have to do it. You know, it's just, oh, my God, it's just, you know, this stuff does not die easy. But I love saying, okay, let's break this down. Let's just see if we can volunteer to do this part of it, because no one's making me do anything, you know. But I just kind of push myself to say, well, maybe we could help out with the Russian stuff, with the Russian translations, which is what I'm helping out with now. Which put me into a position where I was on I've been on several Zoom calls with these amazing people, these translators in Russia, translating our DA literature into Russian, just regular DA members. And to be on these calls has been, I mean, I'm kind of flying after that. I'm a little bit high after that. I love international stuff. I love traveling, being in different places, and it's just phenomenal. You know, I wanted to read some quotes. I wanted to read, not some quotes, but some passages, if I still have time, from this literature, our literature, this 12 and 12 and 12, which is just every word in this book to me is so amazing. This is from Concept 9, which is talking a lot about leadership, but it's also very much towards service. Charity is not a virtue. It is an essential element of leadership. The ability to reach out and seek to understand and support those around us makes the tasks of all easier. And I've certainly been involved in service where people have reached out to me and made sure I understood something or been so helpful. I'll go on now. The desire to forgive perceived slights and to move on in unity is of inestimable value. My dog is coughing right now, sorry. If our service is not motivated by a love of our fellows and a desire to help and assist, it is a vain and empty gesture. 12-step work
you
at whatever...
Two minutes, Chris.
Okay, thank you so much. 12-step work at whatever level of service always proceeds from the impulse of love for our fellows. That's a good one for me to be reminded of. I've gotten caught up in all the different issues that you hear, all the different icky things that can happen being involved in service. I start to think I'm doing more than everybody else, or my way is better, and I completely forget that I need to like I think it's tradition too, where I have a quote, or I just wanted to read a piece that speaks to what I was. You know, I've gotten caught up in all the stuff that makes service not so great. But this book, I mean, all we have to do is read this book, and boy, it's just such great information about each member who volunteers for or accepts a service position enriches his or her own recovery while at the same time working to fulfill DA's primary purpose. When, as Tradition 2 invites us to do, we speak with love, listen, and with openness, humility, maintain clarity, and advocate for the group's greatest good without needing to, without needing to dominate and without being attached to outcomes. Boy, I've fallen there. We are honoring the wisdom of a power greater than ourselves. This is the true spirit of group conscious, which Tradition 2 talks a lot about, but there's a lot about service in there. So my time is just about up. I just want to end with a real quick little story of when I was doing a Share a Day. We happened to be another 12-step program. It was a smaller program, Share a Day, and I was very involved in it. And they had a little talent show. And at the end, I played some music in this talent show. And I had been so busy the whole day running around, being very involved in helping the Share a Day happen, that when it was time for me to play my little piece of music, it was like, okay, next, all right, you know. And I played so amazingly and so freely and so from my core, you know, and it's like, wow, that's what this service does. It frees me. It makes me be able to be who I am. And I still need to work at that a lot, but that one moment was very telling, and just, you know, hopefully that's a hopeful thing for all of us to hear. And with that, I will pass. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Chris. I'm just going to end the recording.